Welcome to Humanity Unchained, a show about the future of life reshaped by artificial intelligence. From practical insights on upskilling to existential talks about immortality, no topic is off limits. Welcome to the future with your hosts, Julia McCoy and Jeff Joyce.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 14 of Humanity Unchained. I'm Jeff Joyce.
And I'm Julia McCoy.
We're here today to talk about a ton of AI stuff, and we definitely missed you, and are glad to be doing this again. We're here in a conference room in what we'd like to call Continesco or Humanity Unchained HQ for now.
Yes. Much like Jeff Bezos started in his garage.
Right. It's a fantastic little space, though. Allows us to really co-work and get a lot done. So I want to go ahead and talk about and start off with Neuralink. And we do have a YouTube video.
It was like using the force on a cursor. I love playing chess, and so this is one of the things that y'all have enabled me to do, something that I wasn't able to really do much the last few years, especially not like this. It's not perfect. I would say that we have run into some issues. I don't want people to think that it is like this is the end of the journey. There's still a lot of work to be done. But it has already changed my life.
Yeah, that video definitely makes me emotional just because the amount of people that can benefit from this. I've had friends before in the past. I even just thought about myself, like if I was paralyzed or if I didn't have function over my arms, what my life would be like. Mm. And the fact that we have this technology now, and they knew that it could be done because even the video that we just watched, it said that in 2004,
yeah,
they were able to achieve this with a wired implant. So I'm really excited for Neuralink. I think that it's definitely a technological marvel
they've
achieved. And it's going to be something that really will help a lot of people that weren't able to connect with people online, give them the ability to do so in a really convenient way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible to see this just happened this January where a AI chip implant was installed. Is that the right word? Implanted, surgically implanted, installed in a human brain. And now we're seeing the results here in March, end of March, the actual full recovery of this patient and the use of the device to where he can control these chess pieces on the computer without moving a mouse. Yes, crazy, Jeff. I was thinking last night, couldn't sleep thinking about all of this. And I was thinking back to the point in time where I remember hearing a modem come online for the first time. And I was like 7 years old. It was the 90s. And I remember thinking shortly after I saw how the internet worked, what if we could control what we see on our screens with our brain? I remember thinking that. And I thought that would be so cool. And now I get to see this in my lifetime. Like that blows my mind that we're here and we can actually see this come to life where we can watch these people tell us how it feels to control a computer with their brain. So just thinking about that is absolutely mind-blowing. And seeing it happen, you know, I've seen a lot of headlines where I think the news grabs onto anything that's negative for the sake of viewership. And there's been a headline going around on Wired trying to quote-unquote expose Elon Musk and Neuralink and talk about the gruesome histories of the monkeys, where there were tests done with Neuralink before it went to human trials. But the truth of that matter, which I dug into and thought about, you know, as a critical thinker, you can't just feed off of what you're seeing in the news headlines. You got to think about it critically and do your own research. So he was experimenting, or rather Neuralink and the scientists were experimenting on terminally ill monkeys. And that completely was left out of that Wired story. So it's interesting to see, you know, in this success, there is a lot of, I think, hate that's directed towards innovation and a lot of lies that are spread. But it's really cool to see this is actually a very successful step for humanity hitting our next level.
Absolutely. And I like how the first thing that he did was play a video game.
Much like a human would.
And it goes deep into that topic of like, if you had all the free time in the world, and what would you do? Like, some people might just want to just relax and play a video game.
Yeah.
Other people are going to be like, I'm very much on this front of like, I want to still create, still do stuff, still pursue what I'm interested in. Some people have that interest as to, you know, play a video game.
Well, we have to think about life in a society where capitalism and economy isn't the driving factor. Because when AGI occurs, there will be no human that will be able to stack up to what AI can do. AI can take over any process, any work, whether it's physical or a software, something we see, something we don't see. It can take over all of that and do that work better. So if we know that that's coming, it's a point in time, could be in the next 5 years, could be in the next year, could be in the next 10 years. It's hard to predict, but a lot of experts say it'll happen by 2030. So if we're headed towards that direction, we need to think about what brings us meaning and what is meaningful work. And if you study old societies, which I have, just to see, is there a pattern here that humanity can replicate? Did you know Sparta had a role in their, you could call it economy, but that's all it was called. It was people in that city. And the rule was you couldn't work. Work was banned. Did you know that that's where the best warriors came from? So you know what they were doing instead of working? They were playing, they were goofing around, and they were training to be their best. And so that state of rest actually produced some of the world's best warriors. What do you know? So we're headed towards a place where AI can do all the work we didn't want to do anyway. You know, a Gallup poll in 2017 found that 85% of people that work hate their jobs. There's no meaning in this life for a lot of people. That's sad. And I think that AI and breakthroughs like Neuralink can really replace that mundane for us and give us the path to a more meaningful life.
We've seen a lot of instances and studies come out with how important rest is for like just retaining information and actually learning something. I forget the exact numbers, but it was talking about how your brain learns by repetition. So when you do something and you actually, like say you learn, you're learning to play guitar, if you play 15 minutes of guitar and then you stop for 15 minutes, your brain will repeat what it just did.
Wow.
A certain number of times to try to ingrain it inside of yourself. So it's important to take breaks to try to digest information. And it's another reason why sleep is so important. And the consecutive days you actually practice something to become an expert, it's very important to rest in between those times, allow your body to internalize everything.
No wonder Sparta had the best warriors.
Yep.
All play and no work makes Jack a good warrior?
I guess so.
It doesn't rhyme.
That leads us right into our next topic, I think. Tesla ready to use humanoid robots to produce electric cars. Do you want to go and kick this one off?
Yes, yes. So Elon Musk, who is, you know, quite the visionary, always forward-thinking, one of the most forward-thinking people of our times, he always looks ahead. And I think that's something we can look to him for, is what is he looking ahead to so that we can look in that direction as well. And something he recently said in this article that came out, I believe, on a Motor1.com site, so third-party news site by an author. This article just came out this March, the end of March 2024. Tesla is taking the Tesla bot, Optimus, and putting them in their factory developing the Tesla cars. And Elon Musk says that he believes the humanoid market is going to be bigger than the electric car market. And I'll tell you, I've been thinking this for a while. If you look in the world and what drives the economy and work, it's physical labor. You walk in a store, you see cashiers, you walk in retail, you see the same thing. So it's just stores, brick and mortar, people working and bodies basically in seats. Is that meaningful work, right? That's the rabbit hole we're going to go down always on this podcast. Is it meaningful work? That's a really interesting thought. It really hasn't been. So think about this physical software. And now we have ChatGPT's brain in some of these humanoids like Figure. And they're developed for mass commercial use. So think about thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, millions of humans that can be replaced by these humanoids that won't complain, can last a full 8-hour charge, can do everything a human can do. So if you think about that, I think the possibilities of that whole entire thing as a market, humanoids, is going to be incredible. And we're going to see that drive a lot of the switch from human to AI to bring us into a post-labor economy where AI is doing the labor. So Elon Musk, as the visionary he is seeing that by saying publicly here recently that the humanoid market is going to be a bigger one and more of a priority for Tesla than electric cars. And he, Elon Musk believes that he'll be able to put the Tesla bot on sale by 2025 for mass market use. But I love that he's actually taking Optimus and putting it in their factories. Like, can it actually develop my car? If it can do that, then it's ready for mass market use. So I think that's brilliant. But, you know, just trust Elon to see the future. I think he really is seeing it with the humanoid market.
One thing that's really interesting is that Elon is saying that he's going to have this by 2025, having this released. If Tesla truck is any indication of that promise, I mean, now we see Tesla trucks everywhere, so it will come. 2025? I don't know.
Do you think the innovation is leading to more innovation and the acceleration is faster?
Yeah, I mean, robotics is such a competitive field that there's so many players now that it's gonna blow up no matter what.
But you don't see Tesla bought by 2025?
No, I'm thinking like 2026, 2027 for like people actually buying it and implementing it. I think that we'll probably in 2025 start seeing production for factories. But I'm not thinking about what I'm thinking about is like the average consumer buying a Tesla bot.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that there's a difficult hurdle that they need to get through with human perception and how people are willing to let this technology inside their homes. I think that there will be a small minority of people that are going to want this immediately and be the early adopters.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bell curve for this is a lot steeper than normal stuff. I think that it's kind of creepy in a way.
Yes.
I think that even for me, I love technology. I'm all about it. I see the use case of a Tesla bot or a Figure 1. I see the use case for it. But there's still that part of me that's just like, when I go to sleep, what is it doing? You know? Like, what if like a hacker came through and just like, you know, take control of it? Like, those are questions, security concerns that I have. And I wouldn't say that I'm paranoid. It's just like, these are all possibilities. I feel like they need to do a good, I don't know if I would say PR, but just marketing around. They need to let people know that it's okay to have these and what security measures they took to make it really safe.
Well, that leads right into the article by The Sun, which is a domestic humanoid that was created for elderly care use. And I tell you, I am so shocked to see this as a use case. Yeah, that's it. And so I don't know if you've heard, probably have, if you're listening to this podcast, you are a critical thinker. If you're listening to this podcast, we'll establish that. You've probably heard a lot of experts, pros say that the population increase is going to explode and the earth will not handle the billions of people that will be added in the next few decades. That's simply not true. We are facing a population decline to the point where by 2050, we will have more elderly than we will have young people to take care of them. So like, this is why you hear Elon Musk say, if I have one takeaway for you people, it's to have more kids. He's actually said that for this reason. So if you can scroll through that article, Jeff. So we're looking at humanoid robots created by a company that's trying to combat the population problem. And they're trying to put these humanoids into care facilities to take care of grandma. And Jeff's over here laughing because, I mean,
have you ever seen Short Circuit or WALL-E?
Yes.
Okay.
That's WALL-E.
That's Short Circuit.
Yeah. So it's crazy because they actually put one of these humanoids on stage and they gave her a name and they gave her a face and like human-like skin. And I just think it's the creepiest thing I have ever seen. If I saw this in a home for the elderly, I would probably make sure no one goes there because of how creepy this thing looks. And it's called a humanoid social robot. They actually named it Nadine. And they're trying to demonstrate, says the article, how robots can look more human. Does that look human to you? That looks creepy as hell.
I'm kind of over this like mentality that we have to have robots that are 100% representative of what we look like and are like bipedal, like have, you know, something to just, let's make them functional to whatever it is they're going to be doing. Like if they need to have four legs, let them have four legs. Like let's make the best robots, not necessarily the, you know, one that mirrors us. Like we want to create something in our image. Like,
yes.
It's a little weird, but.
That's a good point. And that's something Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis, they envision a future where let's say a family needs a house and they've outgrown their house. Maybe they have twins on the way. They're like, oh, we've outgrown this apartment. We need a new house. So in a post-labor society where AI is doing the work, not the humans, a corporation that handles the bots can basically summon an army of bots, and it's not going to look like humanoids. It'll look like a four-legged robot. And then that robot in a single day, well, an army of bots, builds a house. That house is done. Cost of housing just went down 100x. So that's the future we can envision. And it's not really the future that you're going to see in a lot of these headlines and a lot of humanoids that I think won't last, where just like Jeff is saying, and just like we see in this picture from the sun, you know, they're trying to depict something that is more acceptable to society. But I don't think that's actually the humanoid that will last, because what happens is it just ends up creeping us out. Like, I've never seen anything more creepy than this social robot named Nadine who's supposed to care for grandma.
The amount of energy that a robot needs to expend in order to stay upright on two legs is vastly more than one that has four legs. Not to mention the load capacity bearing, they're able to carry more as having four legs as opposed to two. And I think that they're so interested in trying to make it socially acceptable, or people make people okay with trying to get these humanoids into businesses and healthcare and all sorts of stuff, that we're completely overlooking the practical use cases for these robots and what it actually means for transforming the markets. Mm. I think that we will see a four-legged robot with, you know, two arms sticking out of its back, you know, just lifting stuff up and doing weird stuff. And it
looks entirely possible.
Very weird, but it's practical. And that practical use case needs to be at the forefront. So once they stop doing like the marketing ploy of just making everything humanoid and bipedal, I think that we'll start seeing real innovation to like successful AI robotics where they're actually making a huge difference in marketplaces.
Yes, completely agree. Well, what else do we have, Jeff? I think we have AGI and then an existential topic on our list, if I believe right.
We do. By the way, I'm getting used to a new browser. I keep on wanting to go back to Chrome. No, I love this browser. It's Arc browser. Maybe you'll see something from me about that. But yeah, we're going to talk about AGI delayed. Julia, you actually had a video that you sent in Slack that was talking about AGI delayed. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. So there's so much discussion around this. When will AGI come out? And I saw a really good video by David Shapiro, the legal implications of releasing AGI, that I think demystifies some of this. And I agree with a lot of what he said. Not everything, but a lot. So his theory is that AGI will be out by September of this year. You know, Sam Altman believes we're decades away. Siri is now looking up something, thought I commanded her. We're far away. I can't. It just got confirmed.
Yeah, I can't wait for Siri AI.
AGI here.
No.
Let me look that up for you. I didn't command you. But in this video by David Shapiro, the point was made that the danger of actually saying that you have discovered AGI brings about so much legal implications that no big tech corporation will ever admit to having it. And so we could have it right now. We could have it this September. We could be on the verge of a breakthrough. OpenAI and all their multimodal discoveries and innovations. And then we have Microsoft, we have Google, we have Facebook, Meta. So all of these huge races by giant corporations could lead us straight into AGI a lot sooner or later. It's funny because David's point was it's later than expected. And by later, he meant this September instead of this summer. So, okay, that's a lot later. Still same year. So the question is, when will it be here? And some other thought leaders that I respect that I've been listening and following say that when AGI is here, it will be like a train that just went right past us. We won't even know because it won't slow down to tell us. And I think on two main points there, you know, the first one being the legal implications of saying you have it, because then, oh boy, legalities are going to follow you, try to box you in, figure this thing out. Here come the lawmakers, the policymakers trying to govern it. And then on the flip side, you have it just occurs so quickly that it might not even be something we can quantify and know exactly how to define. Oh, AGI is here. Don't even know how to define it. So that's an interesting conversation. Anything you'd add to that, Jeff?
Yeah. I think they were a little bit further off than September.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I've seen from Sam Altman, from other talks, is that really the governance isn't there. We don't have a system in place for us to really put all the pieces together. And right now we're creating all the pieces. And these pieces are really, really good. And some of them give really good indications of what AGI could be like. But we don't have a proper definition of what AGI is. So how can we say something is here without having that definition crystal clear? So I think that it is, yes, when AGI is released, there are legal implications behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the first company to develop AGI is the clear winner and leader. I think that AGI, it's not like you're the first to make a car. And like maybe that car is not too good, and then somebody else comes along and, you know, makes a better car, and like they surpass, they encompass more of the market. Mm-hmm. Or capture more of the market. I don't think this is the same thing with AGI.
Yeah.
I think that when AGI happens, we have it, it is such a profound shift in AI technology and the way we get work done that the quality aspect of it isn't really a concern because it is automated, it is self-improving, it is doing all these things that really make the AI better on its own that we can then use to, you know, do research or create new products or, you know, write your homework, you know? And it'll do that better than most of the population. And I think it's the best interest of OpenAI, if they're the first to do it, or maybe Anthropic or Google, to be the first to market with that, because they'll just capture so much of the market and it will be such a substantial leap forward that they have to do it. They have to be the first. So my prediction is like February, March of 2026. It's a little bit further in September. I think we have a lot of hurdles we need to get through. We even had Sam Altman talking on with Lex Fridman talking about how he thinks even GPT-5 is kind of delayed. Like we would have seen GPT-5 by now. But the thing is that they have so many releases that they feel are more important right now to release before they actually get GPT-5 out. And that tells me that they have more pieces to the AGI puzzle that they want to get out and test before the governing head. I don't know if you watched a previous episode of Hitting Unchained, or Future Tense as it's called then. I gave it a kind of a rundown of what AGI would look like in terms of a person. And I showed a Lego man. And the head is what we're kind of missing. It's like that governance to kind of tell all these pieces to kind of work together, do it coherently, do it safely, and then really automate all the tasks and functions for that. I think that ChatGPT has semblances of that. I don't think it's really good for utility, or it's not able to do that perfectly right now, but in the future it will be, as sort of things like agents come into play and stuff like that. But I'm really leaning towards next year. I don't think it's going to be this year.
Interesting. No AGI for Christmas.
No AGI for Christmas. I mean, I would like to. I hope I'm wrong. I would love AGI for Christmas.
Wish list.
Yeah. What would you have AGI give you for Christmas?
Oh, wow. That's the question. I would say if it could abolish all the nihilistic influences for a post-labor economy, that would be so ideal. That is the major roadblock that I see standing in something that could be the path to a more meaningful world. All the nihilistic views, which is people that are bent on suppressing other people and total control. So if people like that get a hold, that's China, Putin, people like that get a hold of AGI. So my goal is that AGI kills the bad guys. Do something else.
You heard it here first.
Legally. Do something legally.
In a video game. Yeah, that was another thing that is like the whole AGI thing, is that does the government already have it? And the companies are working with the government, they probably already have an AGI system in place. And I'm like, well, I don't think so. I mean, certain sectors are probably pretty advanced and they have, far more capable models with AI, but I don't think they have AGI. I don't think that the government is really in a position to kind of understand how to fully use AI at this moment. If if the White House has any indication, they just released a report recently that said 10% of jobs are at risk.
Oh, Lord.
Which, because of AI. And I had a stroke. I'm having a stroke right now just thinking about it. Because you're telling me 10% of jobs are at risk of AI taking over.
Wow.
The jobs. No, it's more like 70 to 80%.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And we're probably looking at, 40, 50% by 2030?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. If that's any indication there, that's my thought process.
Wow. You know, I saw a really good thought the other day, and it made me think something different. If you watch the Senate hearing that Sam Altman had, where he really tried to bring all this awareness to people in places where they could make laws. I was trying to say governing laws.
Do they have cuts? Are they trying to wrap them up and stop the bleeding? We need a med kit stat.
Put some gauze on those lawmakers. Protect them for what's going. But he was trying to bring them to a point of awareness about what this is actually going to do. And the questions he got were just ludicrous, laughable. Well, does this thing control the mind? They were referencing Hollywood, and it just showed a complete lack of knowledge about what this even is. And Sam was very patient, and he just kept bringing them back to the ABCs of it, and they still weren't understanding. Couldn't even define what LLM is. People in the Senate. So when you see that, I saw a really good thought. When you see that, it's confusing and it's appalling. But what if the lawmakers did know and understand all of the pieces of AI? Would it make them more dangerous? And is it a better thing that they don't know how to define it? Because that puts them in a place of incompetence. And it puts us, the researchers, the creators, the developers of this technology, puts us in a place where we can actually do more to establish this new post-labor economy. And I thought that was a really good thought. Do we even want knowledge in the hands of those people?
Yeah, that's a good question. And another thing I just thought about, too, based off that, is that this isn't to say that there isn't parts of the government that aren't technologically savvy, that understand it.
No.
That there's intelligence agencies, stuff like that, that they obviously have advanced, understanding of systems and AI and social media, all that kind of stuff. But the thing is that in order to run an AGI system, you need a ton of compute.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
This is true.
And right now, the key player is NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, NVIDIA is a for-profit company. Sure, I'm sure they have some type of government contract here or there, but they'd have to buy out a ton of equipment to even run AGI.
Mm-hmm.
So unless Sam Altman has a secret stash somewhere, all the GPUs and stuff that they have are being utilized for internal projects for them.
No.
So, I don't see the government... I haven't seen the instance of the government buying up, 10,000, 50,000 GPUs from NVIDIA yet. Mm. That's not to say they won't, but, so does the government have AGI? I don't think so.
I highly doubt it as well. You brought up a good point. There are branches within the government. If you study what's going on with surveillance and Peter Thiel's technology and Palantir, there's a lot of scary things. Just how much we are actually being surveilled as citizens of our country, it's a little terrifying. So does that mean they have AGI? I agree with Jeff. I really don't think so. I don't see the government having that much capability for innovation because, look at the government. It's all saying. Far behind.
True, true. Far, far behind. 10% of the population.
Oh, it's wild. Boy. Don't read that report.
If they would have said 6 months ago, 10% of the population is... at risk. I would say 10% of our population is already feeling it.
Yeah.
they're already experiencing that slowdown in hiring, jobs being replaced for, AI ML engineers for, advancements in selling bots and all sorts of stuff. So all industries are experiencing it. And writers especially. That's one of the main things that when we started Contesco was hey, it's going to replace some writers that are unwilling to upskill and learn a new technology. And that is happening. And it happened and is still happening.
Yes. Yeah. We're a part of that. We're seeing that happen every day. It's really cool to see copywriters adapt, signing up to Content Scale, using it. You know, I heard of somebody that hires marketing agencies and a CEO, I heard him say, if my marketing agency was not using AI, I would fire them. And you know, what if the White House had a typo? Because all they needed to do was say 10% of the population is not at risk. That's correct.
That would be correct.
They forgot one word, not.
Yeah.
Three letters, N-O-T.
We had a discussion of like what industries are not at risk.
Ooh.
And it was surprising because it's like, when you think about it, like athletes, sports, stuff and like that you'd watch for, maybe like some live musicians, stuff like that. There is certain industries that won't be disrupted as much.
Human experiences, that's going to be very much a lasting thing. I think even more so in a post-robotics, post-labor economy where AI is doing all the mundane so that we turn to humans for entertainment. I don't really think I would ever buy or spend a lot of money on a VIP seat to watch a robot stand on stage and sing in a microphone.
Chuck E. Cheese would say otherwise. I don't know if anybody,
touché.
If you don't know what that is, there's a pizza chain in the United States called Chuck E. Cheese where they had to use like animatronic robots to play the instruments and sing. Now they didn't actually pay the instruments, it's just a recording, but.
But would you pay $3,000 for a Taylor Swift style ticket to front row seats?
I think that you would once, at least. I don't know if you could do it continuously unless it was like, well, I take that back. Look at stuff like the Dome. In Las Vegas, and how like that's a spectacle.
That
AI and robotics allows you to really scale up the production to like deliver a really unique experience that humans on their own just can't do.
That's true. Yeah. I would go see the Dome. I would go see a robotic show in the Dome. I've actually considered that.
So I think that it's tough. I mean,
it is.
There will still be that aspect of like that human asset where it's like, I want to watch something made by a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We still watch classical movies. We still enjoy, I'm not saying we, I'm saying this, like it is
society.
As a species, we still enjoy the classics.
Mm-hmm.
I think there will always be that classics. I still like to collect stuff that has like, even if it's a digital item, I like to have the physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like CDs, like I still buy CDs, but all my music is digital. I only listen digital, but I like having the actual like tactile feel and looking at it, be like, oh, this is the artwork that was in it. This is the lyrics. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And for me, like, I relate so much to the story of the artist still. And I always will. I don't see that really changing. So for me, like, one of my favorite, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, but one of my favorite songs that she wrote that's little known is Bigger Than the Whole Sky. And that actually came from a miscarriage that she had. She really wanted to have a kid, ended up with a miscarriage. And the song is just so beautiful. And it was written out of grief. And you can feel that in the song. And so it really touched me. It actually came out right when I had my son, who was an unexpected surprise gift. I say that. My husband says it was sarcasm. Gift. We were up all night with a baby. But, you know, it's a gift. And so that song came on the radio like shortly after I had him. And so it just really touched me to know that, you know, she didn't get to have that. And all of her wealth and status, she was denied something that I had the joy of having. And at the moment, it felt like a burden to me. So I was able to see it completely differently. But like, a robot's not going to have that story, you know? And so that's where the human factor is going to be the human experience. How will that change when AI does 99%, if not 100% of labor? I think that we will go to human experiences more. And if you study old society in Athens and Rome, there was basically a form of UBI. And there was something called a leisure society, or people didn't work for income. And when you study, a lot of things went wrong. I mean, you know, Rome collapsed. But if you look at some of the things that occurred, that was also an era where the greatest warriors were born, trained, and fought the world's most incredible battles. Alexander the Great was the only conqueror that almost ruled the world, and he came from Rome. So I think it's interesting to study where we could go with more meaningful work, and the power of human experiences. Boy, that was quite the rabbit trail, Jeff.
It was, and we're not done yet. We still have our machine sentient.
Oh, Lord. Let's go there.
And you were saying something, and my brain, I had a light bulb moment, and then that light bulb just turned on. Like, this is I need Elon Musk, if you're watching this, I know you are. You love this show. I need a Neuralink that like feeds myself my own ideas, to where I don't forget them like 5 seconds later. I have a goldfish brain, please. Thank you.
Are you saying you're disabled?
One could say.
I heard those are the only people for Neuralink. I'm not kidding, Jeff. You know what I'm going
to do. So what do you think, Julia? Are machines sentient?
The light bulb, Neuralink, disabled.
Yep.
Conversation. Still on that. We can edit this part and see. This is why you don't live stream.
Right.
That's a good segue. Are machines sentient? Oh my goodness. So this is something, talk about a light bulb moment. I had a little light bulb moment when I was thinking about this, researching it, because the question of consciousness is a really big one. And if you study people like Ray Kurzweil and scientists that have really immersed themselves in the study of computational power, computer science, robotics, they actually avoid the topic of consciousness entirely. In fact, Ray says that we can't quantify consciousness, and if we can't quantify it, therefore there is no conversation around it. That blew my mind that one of the world's most renowned AI scientists said that. He has no answer when it comes to consciousness. So this is where I have some very strong beliefs. I believe that consciousness, sentience, comes from having a soul, and that soul is something we are endowed, we are gifted with at birth, and that soul lives in another realm, and that's why it can't be quantified here in this realm on earth. It's in a spiritual realm, and that soul is given to us by God, and that's why I believe that machines will never be sentient, because that is something that comes from another realm entirely, the supernatural realm. Now, that said, I do believe one thing, that machines will appear to be sentient to a point where it's going to be actually really hard to tell that simulated sentience from real sentience. And it's something to, I think, be on guard for, because fear, all through history, fear has been the number one instrument of control. If we fear something, we are easily controlled. So if we fear these machines that appear very much sentient and very conscious, and we give them, let's say, all the rights of a human because we believe that they rival the sentient human, then we kind of put ourselves in a place of being controlled by an entity that is not sentient. And I have a problem with that. I think that the people in control should be people. And in the end, what rules the world should not be something that isn't sentient. Now, that said, are there people that have worse motives than machines that are agnostic? Absolutely. There are very, very many. Nihilism is well and alive. And so that is a whole other problem. And there are machines that would be better off in government control than people. But that said, should we put all of world government in the hands of a machine that is not sentient? I do not think so. Are machines sentient? No, they're not. Jeff.
Yeah, this is a rabbit hole for me. I have a lot of thoughts on it, and there's a lot of different explanations for like what consciousness could be, and one of the explanations I've heard is like the degree to which you're like self-aware that you know like about yourself. They're able to like picture, see like your own self-image and like how you view the world, or like that. There's a lot of aspects of it that make up a conscious thought. And you know, they talk about how young kids express, like when they're very, very young, they are kind of absent-minded when it comes to like conscious thought, that degree of like who they are, that self-image, until they start getting older. And if you think about it, like the brain grows over time, mm-hmm. to where it has more compute.
Mm-hmm.
When you have something like, so if in that instance, if we think about consciousness and this idea of being self-aware as a computational problem, it's like, well, if a brain and that aspect is just increasing in size, increasing capacity and functionality, then maybe the idea of consciousness is somewhere in between that scale to where with enough scale that can exist. Now, there is the aspect of like the soul and stuff like that if you are religious. And for me, I think that there is an aspect of like that undeniable feeling of like the soul. I think that is a thing, but I don't feel that it's truly connected to consciousness. Mm-hmm. I don't think that souls are necessarily, and this is my personal belief, but I don't think that souls aren't necessarily tied to just us as beings. Mm-hmm. I think that like when you look at animals and stuff like that, that they all have some aspect of a soul and they all have some aspect of consciousness. I think that if to say that they don't, it's like, it's a weird for me. And so that's where my kind of ideal lies on that. And I think that where we can start to see conscious thought in artificial intelligence with enough computational power to where their brain really expands and they get, you know, we develop these internal thoughts. Well, we're not using that camera. Maybe we'll use it for that. I mean, we're probably almost done anyways.
Oh.
But so yeah, I don't think that, I think that we can achieve conscious thought in robotics and with AI. I think that we will see a kind of a self-awareness within robots. We're already starting to see this, things like Claude, where it's able to identify jokes, they will identify tests that people are giving it and be like, you're trying to test me.
Mm-hmm.
So it understands that it is an AI system,
mm-hmm.
and that somebody externally is trying to test that system. And that is artificial, but at what point is it not artificial? You know, one of the exercises that they say, if you're unhappy, is to reflect and practice gratitude. You are actively unhappy, but you're telling yourself that you are, and you're giving yourself reasons why you should be happy, and that naturally will make you happy. And I think that with things like emotions like that, maybe with enough computational power, that telling yourself and reaffirming yourself that you are something becomes that natural thought process with that kind of like neural mind map that AIs have. Yeah, and that's a rabbit hole. That is a lot of deep thought there.
That is, yes. It's interesting that, you know, I think we can look at machines as being capable of thought processes that are better than humans. That's crazy. We're actually living in an era where that is 100% happening, going to happen, AGI, ASI. So we're looking at an entity that will actually be smarter than us. So if we're seeing that, I think it's a very natural question. Well, is this thing sentient? Is it self-aware? Does it have consciousness? And I think there's a big difference between human consciousness and machine consciousness. I think the LLMs in and of themselves, you know, they've studied like feral children that grew up without language. Well, these children had way less self-awareness, but did they still have a soul? They did. They just didn't know how to express it. So LLMs kind of carry that ingredient that we need to be sentient. But is it sentient? And these are the questions we will continue to discuss on Humanity Unchained.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome show. I think we'll go ahead and end that episode there. Thank you so much for watching. If you are a YouTube listener, I want you to go ahead and go down to the comments and answer the question. Do you think that machines can or will be sentient?
Yes.
And please leave us your opinion there.
Tell us.
I'll definitely be reading through those. Yeah, I think that's it.
That's a wrap.
We will be recording next week, right? Yes. We'll have another episode next week on Tuesday for you guys. And yeah, anything else you want to add, Julian?
I would say we're bringing on special guests. So you can expect third parties to these conversations that will add a fun ingredient to these questions that Jeff and I like to debate at length. And I really love, you know, bringing in multiple viewpoints because I think, you know, we're each entitled to our own viewpoints and it's very healthy to express those different viewpoints and to get these thoughts out there because the worst thing we could ever do is not talk about this. I think this is probably the most important conversation we could have is how to prepare for this new world where AI does 100% of the labor. Are these things sentient? What is consciousness? And it's crazy to me that the best computer scientists out there won't even go to these topics. So you can trust that we will. And we'll be bringing special guests starting next week. But yeah, I think that's a wrap, Jeff. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
Bye, everybody.